From here on, the path you choose is up to you. I'm around to answer questions, offer information, and keep watch to see how you fare. How you pass the test is entirely in your hands. And what is my test exactly? Aside from injuring me, you've given little indication as to what I should do. From her pocket, Deborah produced a small watch and threw it over to me. I snatched it from the air and looked it over. So far as I could tell, it was just a regular timepiece. Still, I slipped it onto my wrist, just to be safe. The test is simple, Fred. It's the test all vampires have been handed since the first of us was created. Survive. You're stuck in the wilderness, severely undernourished, and there's approximately 6 hours left until sunrise. All you have to do is not die. 3. Daunting a task as that proposal seemed, given our current circumstances, I was no stranger to overwhelming work. The trick was to break it into manageable chunks, handling things one step at a time. Keep perspective. Don't let yourself get bowled over. Those were the platitudes that ran through my mind as I tried to retain a cool head. My first task had to be food. The cravings hitting me were too intense to ignore, and each one was a little harder to push away than the one that came before. Remaining in this condition risked compromising my sense of reason. That was an asset I couldn't afford to lack in such a situation, especially when there was a real chance I might have to find shelter to wait out the sun. Hungry Fred might not be smart enough to stay in the shade through an entire day. The obvious answer would have been my flask, but that was gone with the rest of my backpack. Deborah had made sure to strip me of my gear before she'd knocked me out of the car, evidence yet again of her ability to think more steps ahead than I cared to consider. I might be able to climb back to it eventually, though it was likely she'd not allow me to drink. Her opinions on self-reliance and lack of tools for this lesson had been made abundantly clear. Even if that weren't the case, I was looking at a long, steep climb that would offer no chances to eat nor anywhere to shelter from the sun. If I was at full strength, I might have been fast and sure enough, but going for the car now was an all-or-nothing move. I disliked such options. There were usually smarter ways to tackle a problem. Rustling noises hit my ears, a reminder that Deborah and I were hardly alone in the forest. Expanding my senses didn't take effort. In fact, it was the opposite. Keeping my selective attention focused was the harder option. I let the information flow into me. Sounds, smells, sights of shadowy figures bounding through the brush. The more I listened, the more alive the woods became. Amidst the flora were a few sizable bodies, bodies large enough to have big, strong hearts pumping plenty of blood. Only, I didn't know if I should eat those. I wanted to. The sound of pumping blood drew a fresh scream from my stomach, but moving without thought would just make my troubles worse. You said you were here to offer guidance, answer questions. Does that mean I can ask you anything? If Deborah really was here to teach, it would be idiocy not to lean on her for knowledge. I can offer information, just not solutions, she replied. For example, if you wanted to know whether vampires can cross running water, I would say yes, but I wouldn't tell you how to get over a river. Got it. The arrangement was limited, yet better than I'd dared hope for. I had plenty of vampire questions, not all of them related to our immediate situation. Those could come later. Right now, my priority was food. Can vampires drink animal blood? I mean, obviously we can do it. We're physically stronger, but will doing so... I'm not a djinn, Fred. I'm not going to screw you on the subtext. Your question came through loud and clear. Deborah was at my side in seconds, standing with me, seeing and hearing the exact same things I did. To answer your question, yes, we can eat animals. However, there are reasons that we don't, as a rule. Taste, for one. Whatever it is about our bodies that makes human and parahuman blood taste so good, the same power does not extend across the animal kingdom. It's tolerable, better than it should be, but by no means can one compare it to the real thing. That's just flavor, though. The bigger problem is nutrition. Something moved in the trees ahead, something big. Maybe a wolf, maybe a deer. It was impossible to say from so far off. The growl of hunger that rose in my throat, on the other hand, was unmistakable. I couldn't imagine staying like this for an entire day. Then I remembered that the Turva clan used to punish Lillian by making her go for weeks without blood, and I gained a whole new understanding of just how cruel those bastards were. Think of animals like donuts and humans like oranges. You can have either one for breakfast, but one is far more nutritious than the other. That said, you can subsist off donuts if you eat enough of them. Got it. Conservation of effort. Draining animals gets you less results and less enjoyment than drinking from humans. So it's not something a vampire would do in an ideal situation, but in a pinch... I wasn't looking, but I could hear her neck move as she nodded. In a pinch, we are like humans. We eat what we must to survive. Nearby, a squirrel ran up a branch. My hands started to reach out on instinct, but I stayed them. Conservation of effort. Getting that squirrel would require climbing and chasing, only to pay out with a relatively small amount of blood. If the nutrients were lacking, I'd have to make up for it in volume, which meant exerting myself for only the prey that would provide more energy than they cost me. Deborah's hit to the tree had demonstrated my problem well. The more power I used, the more the hunger grew. It was a delicate balancing act of quenching my thirst without losing control. My eyes closed. Vision wasn't important right now. I needed to hear. Something with footsteps, heavy enough to register over an unseen distance. Something with enough body mass to work up a good funk, the kind my nose could sense. Tracking was a skill I'd barely had any practice with, yet to my surprise it seemed to come naturally. This low on blood, I was closer to my vampire mind than I'd ever been before, a razor-thin margin of discipline, the only thing keeping us separate. But that part of me, the piece that had invaded along with the fangs and pale skin, knew exactly how to hunt. This wasn't like back in the city, in my first and only attempt to be a proper vampire. I wasn't conflicted, or scared, or uncertain about what I'd become. I was hungry. Dimly, in the part of my brain that had been tamped down by the hunger, I realized that if not for my blood contact at the hospital, I would have reached this point long before now. It would have happened while I was in the city, surrounded by people. The cravings would have set in until I was overwhelmed by them, and it was easy to imagine what would have happened next. Maybe that was how most vampires learned to eat. Maybe that was why they grew so cavalier about killing. I was running before I'd even registered I'd found a target. My instincts were already slipping beyond my control, like a bike beginning to wobble before a crash. Still, I kept moving, my feet willing themselves along the ground at a near blur. I had no idea where I was going or what direction I was even heading in. I just knew that something with a strong heartbeat was in front of me, and I needed to find it. All at once I came to a stop. There, in a small clearing, stood an old wolf chewing on the remains of a small animal I could no longer identify. For a fleeting moment, fear gripped my heart. What if it was a Therian? Even if we knew one another, in a situation like this, things might escalate to violence without warning. The wolf turned to me, his eyes burning, but simple. Just a wolf, then, no flicker of intelligence beneath the beastly facade. His thin form and visible ribs were also signs of normality. No Therian would end up so starved in a forest full of prey. The bigger problem, however, was that he'd seen me, and I no doubt looked far more appetizing than the worn morsel in his muzzle. I'd never killed anything before, outside of a stray bug or spider that made it into my home. It wasn't an issue in my everyday life, and I certainly didn't seek out such action. However, I had eaten plenty of meat in both my life and after, so it wasn't as though I hadn't subsisted on the lives of others. The difference was that this time there was no middleman. If I wanted to fill my belly, I would have to be the one who did the deed. In truth, I might have turned away in that moment, used the last of my willpower to back out of the clearing, except I knew the wolf would follow. I wasn't the only predator in these woods. He was clearly hungry, too. So hungry he was likely suppressing the instincts that should be alerting him to the danger of what I was. My shape might be human, but the wolf would know that I was more than that. Animals were attuned to danger. They hadn't dulled their instincts the way humanity had. Regardless of what the wolf must have sensed, it bared its teeth and advanced, ready to bet its life on the fight rather than languish in hunger. With a flurry of movement, the wolf bounded toward me. Forgive me, dear listener, but I'm afraid I have little to offer in the way of details from our skirmish. The principal issue is that I was not fully in my right mind at the time, and when I think back to that moment, all I see are flashes of images, none of which are the sort of pictures I would describe in details to others. The end result was that I won. Obviously. When I snapped back to my senses, I was crouched over the wolf, my fangs pressed into its neck, slowly draining away its life force. A voice was calling to me, a familiar one I recognized, one I knew it was dangerous not to heed.
Enough. Fred, I said that's enough. I can't pull you off the wolf, that defeats the purpose. You have to do this. You have to stop yourself.
Blinking, I looked up from the wolf's still panting body to find Deborah standing a few feet away, speaking in a calm, measured voice. Surprise, perhaps shock, danced in her eyes as she saw me react, saw me pull away from the animal still within my grasp. "I'm sorry," I replied. "Were you saying something? I seem to have lost focus."
"I was telling you to stop drinking."
She watched me carefully, then tapped on the side of her neck.
"Lick the wolf's wound. Use your tongue and lots of saliva. When we feed, our bodies go wild. Part of that is the amplification of our regenerative abilities. Seal that wound with your spit, and there won't be a trace of it within the hour. This is how vampires feed without killing. This is how we've subsisted among the humans for so long."
My mouth didn't want to lick. It wanted to bite, to drink, to keep going until the wolf was an empty husk. Instead, I did as I was told, carefully licking the wound, working hard to ignore the taste of fur. No wonder animals were considered a last-ditch effort. As I rose, I noticed that one of the wolf's legs was broken. Our scuffle hadn't been a gentle one, it seemed.
"What about the leg? Can I heal that?" "Unlikely. An older vampire might be capable of healing it with saliva, assuming they'd just had an excellent helping of blood. But that's a lot more than a pair of fang wounds. You can kill it if you'd like. The point isn't to save the wolf's life. I needed to teach you about pulling back midway through a feeding. Marshalling your thirst is among the most important fundamentals for a vampire to master. Laying on torn-up grass, the wolf panted in pain. It hadn't been in great shape before, and losing unknown pints of blood to me certainly hadn't helped matters. He would have killed me had our roles been reversed. I knew that instinctually, and I couldn't blame him for it. If Deborah hadn't arrived, there was a very good chance I'd have killed him, too. It was the way of nature, of animals. One had to kill if they wanted to eat. Regardless of what that part of my brain wanted me to think, however, I was not an animal. I was a person. A parahuman, yes, but that still came from the root word of human. The wolf would have killed me, but that didn't excuse me from the burden of trying to be better than a wild beast. Crouching down, I looked him square in the eyes. "Don't bite me. I'm not sure I can control how I'll react yet." With no idea if the creature understood, I reached down and cradled it in my arms.
"What are you doing?"
Deborah seemed uncertain of my action, watching me warily as I lifted the wolf from the ground. "Taking him with us. I'm sure someone in Richard's employ knows enough to help mend a malnourished wolf with a broken leg, unless you're going to tell me that's against the rules?"
"There are no rules, Fred. There are only guidelines established by the powerful. If you're strong enough, you can ignore them. The only rules, the only limits, are what we can accomplish."
She stepped over to us, gently running a hand along the wolf's fur. "I'm glad you've chosen to haul a wounded animal around with us, though. It provides an objective example of the very reason I decided to provide this lesson. You overestimate yourself, and you act as though you have more power than you do." A gurgle rose from my stomach before I could ask for clarification. The hunger was weaker this time, more manageable, but still there. I wasn't full yet. I had hunting left to do, and I was going to try to accomplish this feat with a wounded source of blood in my arms.
"That, in my view, is your fundamental problem," Deborah continued. "You are kinder than you have the strength to be."
4. I wrapped the wolf's leg with torn denim from the left ankle of my jeans, more to suppress the scent of blood than out of any illusion that it would help. My stomach already ached for more, despite how much it felt like I'd drunk. Deborah was right. Animal blood didn't satisfy the same way the human stuff did. With all the damage she'd inflicted, I might need to drain a moose to feel fully recovered. That could come later, though. Wrapping the leg would weaken the scent of wolf's blood, allowing me to find new sources, ones I could drink from without injuring, hopefully. As I worked, Deborah did a quick turn of the area. Maybe it was to see where she would hide if the sun came up before we finished. Maybe it was to leave me alone with my thoughts. I was beginning to see the futility in trying to understand her methods. Sooner or later, she'd explain them if she so chose. This wasn't a mystery. It was an education she'd imparted before. Countless, unknowable times before, in fact. Deborah reappeared just as I finished up the wrappings.
"Don't name the wolf."
"Beg pardon?"
"You're the sort who would name the creature in this situation. Don't. If you kill it, that will only make you feel worse."
It was a fair point to raise, albeit not one I wanted to hear in the moment.
"You think this is silly, don't you? I've gotten a good sense of how most vampires view things like kindness and mercy."
"They think kindness is weakness."
To my surprise, there was a touch of sadness in Deborah's tone as she stepped to my side, using a careful hand to pet the wolf's flank.
"Forgive them some day, if you can. They are still so new to this world, so very raw.
They will learn in time, those that survive, anyway. And no, Fred, I don't agree with those views. In my opinion, kindness is, in fact, the very opposite of weakness. Kindness is a display of strength.
Her eyes darted up, scanning the surrounding trees, yet also looking past them toward flickering memories I wasn't privy to.
Putting the well-being of others over your own demands strength. Strength of will, strength of character, sometimes actual physical power. In the case of showing mercy, for example, actual strength plays a large role. To let an opponent walk away when one has the chance to kill them requires you to be sure, absolutely certain, that your power is great enough they won't strike again. If they do, and you lose people you love in the process, then what you had wasn't strength at all. It was hubris.
Deborah turned from the forest to look me dead in the eyes, her vision no longer lost in the past.
That is your problem, Fred. You act as though you have the strength to show such kindness, but you don't. You're not powerful enough to protect your human friend while avoiding the murder of a mage, yet you would have done so whether I was there or not. You lack the experience and raw force to stand against other clans, yet you founded one all the same. You are weak, yet you act as if you're strong. For a time that has worked in your favor, but it won't last forever. Sooner or later you'll push too hard, make the wrong enemy, lack the support of the right ally, and then all those actions you thought were kindness will reveal themselves as little more than hubris, and they will drag you and your friends down together.
And your advice would be what? Stop acting as though I still have a sense of decency?
Not at all.
She broke our gaze, looking down at the wolf. His panting had evened out, and his heart rate had slowed. It could have been wishful thinking, but I hoped the rap was helping the pain.
I just told you my thoughts on kindness and its relation to strength. I don't want weaker, worse vampires in our world. No, I want you to understand that sooner or later, you'll either have to be more ruthless or more powerful. This tenuous balance you have won't hold forever.
Her hand ran through the wolf's fur once more.
A stronger, better-trained vampire could have subjugated this creature without hurting it. A more ruthless one would have killed it outright, so it wouldn't feel pain. This is what happens when you try to walk the path of the powerful without the strength to back it up. You cause needless suffering. Tonight, it was a wolf. Tomorrow, who knows which of your loved ones your kindness will hurt?
I wanted to argue with her, and with more time and a steady mind, I might have put together a proper counter. In that moment, though, with my stomach growing ever more restless and the injured creature before my eyes standing testament to what she'd said, no worthy rebuttals sprang to mind. Even if I debated her on semantics, what would be the point? Deborah was the second vampire I'd encountered who didn't outright reject the idea of showing compassion for others, and even Lillian had needed to be brought around to the notion. Her objection wasn't against me trying to act like a decent person. It was that I was consistently biting off more than I could chew, forgive the expression. I was trying to help my friends, to keep them safe when I could pitch in, but I lacked the power to do so properly. How many close calls had there been throughout the years? How many situations where we barely scraped by? How many of those might have been different if I hadn't insisted on staying as human as possible? I could have asked Gideon for more dragon blood. He still claimed the scales between us were not balanced yet. Hell, I could have accepted the vial of blood Sheriff Thorgood offered me in Borback.
even without knowing what was inside, I had smelled the power radiating off the contents of that vial. Yet I never took those paths. I stayed on normal human blood because it kept me more mundane, as close to the human I had been as I could still be. I was scared of being more, of losing myself like so many older vampires seemed to. In the beginning, when I was just an accountant, it was one thing. But I wasn't just Fred anymore. I was kidding myself to pretend otherwise. I was the head of a parahuman clan, a public acquaintance to the King of the West, fiancé to an esteemed agent of the agency, friend of one who held a weapon of destiny, and, at this point, it hardly seemed prudent to deny it, enemy to the House of Turva. Not using my power was a choice I could make in any moment, balanced against the danger of the situation. If I lacked that power to start with, however, then the choice was forever out of my hands. It was time to accept the truth of my new life, to stop running from the very idea of becoming stronger. Power, knowledge, magic, those things didn't make people monsters. It was what they did with those gifts that mattered. "Will you teach me to hunt?" Carefully, I rested the wolf's head against the grass, making sure its breathing remained undisturbed. To hunt properly, I mean. To take only what I need and leave no wounds behind. "I am here for guidance. That lesson certainly falls within the bounds of a vampire's education." Deborah pointed upward to the starry sky overhead. "But don't forget we're on a clock. Are you sure you have time for that?" For the first time since my fall, I was feeling completely clear-headed, though how long it would last was anybody's guess. "I'm sure. We're too far away from town to make it back by sunrise, which means we'll likely have to find shelter. I can't trust myself to stay hidden until my hunger is sated, so the best means of survival I have is to deal with the hunger first, find a safe place to hide, and then make the trek home after sunset. The more expedient method would be to leave the lesson for another day, kill some animals quickly, and then use our more ample time to find a good hiding spot," Deborah pointed out. "Stopping mid-drink requires more self-control. If my primary worry is keeping myself restrained throughout the day, then it makes the most sense to train that self-control as much as possible in the time we have remaining." Silence was her only reply for nearly half a minute, followed by a loud theatrical sigh. "That's tenuous reasoning at best. But you're asking me to teach you, so I will. Pay close attention. You won't have time for me to repeat myself. And find a better place to hide Ernest while we hunt. If another creature out here spies him, he's as good as eaten." It took me a moment to catch on to what she'd said. "I thought you warned me not to name the wolf." "Yes, well, vampires all start out as humans. Is it any surprise that some of us continue being hypocrites?" 5. Hunting was easier the second time around. Part of that came from the fact that I was no longer hanging on to my self-control by the tips of my metaphorical fingers. The hunger had been sated enough to allow me a measure of clear thought. While that might have slowed me on another night, giving me too much time to think and complicate matters by overanalyzing, on this evening my focus was clear and driven. Whether the cause was the solitude, the gnawing force in my stomach, or the discussion with Deborah was hard to pin down. Regardless, I was determined not to shy away from the lesson. Deborah was right. Some day I might very well find myself short on blood and long on thirst. If I didn't know how to keep control of myself in that kind of situation, then I was putting others at risk. To be fair, I was still a poor hunter. No amount of drive overcomes a lifetime of avoiding violence and a squeamish reflex to the idea of attacking an innocent creature. Thankfully, I wasn't so bad that vampire powers and Deborah's guidance couldn't close the gap. We moved together, racing easily through the shadows until we came upon a large animal. I think it was an elk, but in all honesty, I lack the knowledge to say with any certainty. Together, we circled and pounced, me mimicking Deborah's movements like a child playing a game of copycat. Only, it was no laughing matter when we struck. The creature that was probably an elk tried to fight, but Deborah had it in an uncompromising grip, holding the beast in place as much for its own safety as ours. When we were done, the wounds were licked, and the potential elk was sent on its way, angry and a little tired, but otherwise unharmed. We continued like that, with Deborah gradually thrusting more and more of the work onto me as we hunted. While I never had the fluid precision she demonstrated, I was at least able to keep from injuring any more animals while we fed. Near the end, when I was finally feeling somewhat sated, we came upon a freshly killed deer. Our presence scared off whatever had done the deed, but we could hear its footsteps racing away in the darkness. Neither of us was going to feed from a dead deer, but to my surprise, Deborah tore off a chunk of its flesh, a part unsullied by the killer. It wasn't until we returned to the tree where Ernest waited that I understood what she was doing. With practiced speed and surety, Deborah constructed a fire and began to roast the meat. Wolves normally eat things raw, but given this one's age and weakened condition, it's probably better to cook it, just in case. We don't want Ernest getting ill. "Won't the smell draw more wild animals?" I asked. "It's possible. That's something we'll just have to deal with, though." Her eyes wandered back to the dancing flames. "Besides, the fire will keep most at bay. That's what it does. The spark in the darkness." More staring ensued, and when she next spoke, her voice sounded miles away. "In the early days, this was all the humans had. Before buildings, before cities, before guns and bows and silver, before countries even, there was fire. We used to prowl in the darkness, watching for these glowing lights. They were temptation and warning rolled into one. You always knew there were humans around a fire, and yet to approach one was to make yourself as vulnerable as we could be back then." I suppressed the urge to make an audible gulp. When Lillian had pointed out that Deborah's name went back to biblical times, I had been amazed by the idea of someone living that long. But what she spoke about now, a time when all humans had was fire, that was a whole other measurement of time. Granted, without knowing where she hailed from, it was possible she'd been in a place that was slower on the technological development curve, yet even with that assumption, Deborah had to be incredibly old. Much as I wanted to know more, I'd already been rebuked on the age issue once before. Instead, I decided to try to learn more about vampires in general. It was a subject I'd been eager to broach, and it hardly seemed as though we'd get a better chance than the current situation. "Just to double-check, we don't have to worry about any of those animals developing parahuman traits, do we? I've been told that we can only turn humans by feeding them our blood after we've fed from them." Crystal made sure I was aware I should never do that. "But the biting alone doesn't cause side effects, right?"
"Probably."
Deborah finally jerked her eyes from the flames, scanning our surroundings for potential intruders. "There are old stories, tales of how the first Therian was a vampire's pet who was drunk from constantly until magic seeped into their bones, but it's bullshit as far as I could ever tell. Still, magic is magic, and if it were entirely predictable, mages wouldn't be so highly in demand. You can never be totally sure some moose won't have a lost enchantment in its blood that one of our bites then triggers, but it's a minimal concern. And yes, the only way to transfer our curse is to drink, then feed a human our blood. It doesn't work on animals or other parahumans. I'll save you the heartbreak of trying. Even when you try to turn someone, be prepared for it to fail. Very few humans actually make the transition, and we've never found a way to predict who will survive. I don't think it's going to be an issue for me. Granted, I don't exactly hate being a vampire, thanks to the people it's brought into my life, but it's still not something I can imagine ever passing on to someone else. Deborah sent another lingering, distant stare at me, though this one was cut off by a tired sigh as she turned her attention to the stars. Long-term thinking, Fred. Do you really not suspect that in a potentially endless life you'll never meet a human you want to save? What about your friend Asha? What if that mage had been a little faster? What if he'd avoided her surprise attack? If she was bleeding out on the carpet, death looming in her eyes, would you deny her even the chance to keep going? Sure, she'd probably die from the attempt, but isn't that better than certain death? Or in 50 years, when she's old or sick, and you're still exactly the same, do you really believe she or another human like her won't beg you to at least attempt to give them immortality? It was tempting to say that I would resist the urge, but then again, why would that be my default? I knew firsthand that, while being a vampire might not be ideal for everyone, it certainly wasn't a fate worse than death. And if someone I cared about was caught between dying and becoming undead, I very well might be willing to try, assuming it was what they wanted. I hadn't been given a choice in becoming a vampire, but that didn't mean one couldn't have such an option. I'll tell you something, Fred. Something that's not really a secret, but also isn't especially well known. My real name isn't Deborah. Deborah was a child who wound up in my care a few 100 years ago. At first, she was a burden. Then, over time, I grew to love her like a daughter. I raised her, cared for her. And when she grew old, I tried to save her. She wasn't one of the lucky few, however. So I took her name, because that's what I do with the loved ones I've lost. After thousands of years, their faces will fade. You'll forget their scent, the feel of their embrace, the warmth of their presence. And soon the names will go too. Imagine that. Imagine Crystal, the woman you love enough to marry, being such a distant memory that you can no longer recall something as fundamental as her name. The idea seemed ludicrous, yet here was someone who had lived long enough to see it come true. That wasn't a guarantee that my life would unfold the same way as Deborah's had, but it was absolutely reason enough to stay on guard for such issues. Rejecting the wisdom of one who'd seen so much would be pure hubris indeed. That's why I take their names, Deborah continued. You can forget a lot, but when everyone calls you by a name for hundreds of years, it tends to stick, even in memories like ours. Maybe one day I'll get so old that even that will stop working. For now, thankfully, the habit does its job. I can keep a small piece of them alive, if only in the catacombs of my memory. Feel free to copy that if it helps, but most of us have to find our own ways of hanging on. With a flash of movement, she removed the stick that Ernest's dinner was roasting on and plucked the meat free without so much as a wince. Slowly, she approached the injured wolf. She tore off and fed him small pieces of the meat, so patiently and gently that I'd have never imagined she was the same person who'd ripped a giant clawed monster in half the night before. Then again, that was the thrust of Deborah's point in taking me on this trip. She had the option to decide when to be gentle and when to be ruthless. By keeping myself weak, I had only one recourse. And yet, despite the many good points she'd made, part of me couldn't help wondering if having the option to win through pure violence wouldn't lead someone to start taking that path even when it wasn't needed. After all, Deborah had been explicitly clear that she felt I made things needlessly harder by trying to capture Kevin rather than kill him. Gaining control of myself and the hunger was one thing. Going after power, however, was an entirely different proposition. I didn't want to be the kind of person who hit first and asked questions later, but I also didn't want to be an anchor that weighed my friends down either. It was a conundrum without question. Luckily, it wasn't one I had to solve this evening. With my hunger sated, the next step was to find somewhere to hide during the coming day. Now that I knew how long Deborah had been around, her mindset made more sense. If she was from a time before true civilization, then it was no wonder she would instill the idea of self-reliance. For her, this had been the only life she'd known for an untold number of years. Much as I loved civilization, I'd also read enough history to know that nothing lasted. In another 1,000 years, I might very well be back in this exact situation, living in the wild, hunting to survive for another day. "My first instinct was to bury ourselves," I said, breaking the silence that had fallen between us. "Dig deep in the dirt, get good and shielded from the sun, but that has two problems that I can see. One, we leave Ernest unprotected for the entire day, and two, we're at the mercy of other wild animals. If something hungry catches our scent and tried to dig us up, we'd be caught in the sunlight. Although the chances are low, I'll grant you, it's a needless risk. We should try to find some kind of cave to shelter in for the day. If we fail, then we can return to the burying idea, but this way, we use our remaining time to look for a superior option. Better to make the most of our time and try to find as ideal a shelter as possible." "You're the one making the calls." The last of the meat vanished from Deborah's hands, and seconds later, she'd carefully hefted Ernest into her arms. The wolf let out a yawn so cute, I suddenly remembered the lineage between his kind and dogs, and then appeared to go limp. Whether it was fear or affection, Ernest had clearly decided to accept that his life was in our hands. I wished I had faith in his judgment, but there was no time for self-doubt. We'd spent a lot of the night on hunting, and soon the sun would rise. If Deborah and I didn't find shelter before that happened, Ernest would be left in the care of little more than 2 twin piles of ash.
6.
It took a long while, so long I began to mentally mark spots with soft-looking soil in case we had to go back to the burying plan, before Deborah and I finally stumbled upon a small cave in the side of the mountain. The opening was easily wide enough to slip through, even while carrying Ernest, and it appeared deep. A moment's examination showed a slight bend in the cavern's mouth that led farther in, partially obscuring whatever lay inside. That didn't hinder the scent of the occupant, as we were both keenly able to smell that something was already inside. Even Ernest whined a little as we drew closer.
"Bear."
The word said it all. Deborah recognized the scent of the cave's owner, a creature we'd have to contend with if we wanted to hide in the mountain's depths. Overhead, the sky was already beginning to grow gray. We didn't have much time left. Searching for another cave was out of the question. There was still enough dark remaining to bury ourselves, though we'd have to rush. Ernest would, of course, be fully on his own. All in all, the cave was unquestionably the superior option, assuming we were willing to fight for it.
Just the one bear? As far as I can tell. He's got a potent musk, though. It might be masking others.
Information, but no guidance. It seemed Deborah would stick by her role to the very end.
We'll go in, staying on this side of the bend. Maybe the bear's asleep and won't notice us if we don't go in too deep.
It wasn't cold enough for the creature to be in hibernation, not by a long shot, but there was still a chance the bear had eaten well and that it would snooze throughout the day. It was worth hoping for, at least.
And if he does notice us, then we'll drain him like we did the others until he's too tired to try to fight.
Deborah shook her head. Not we. You. This is your survival, Fred. Teaching you to hunt was one thing. Helping you safely take down a bear is another. You want to do this without killing, then you have to be strong enough to do it without killing.
That was a slightly more terrifying prospect, but it wasn't as though I hadn't anticipated the possibility. Ultimately, it changed nothing. The best way for all three of us to survive the day was by hiding in that cave. I dearly hoped that the bear would stay put, or that I'd be powerful enough to subdue it by myself, and tried desperately not to think about the fact that none of that might prove to be true. There were no sure choices, no certain paths. The best I could do was the method I'd stuck with since I first became undead. Pick the best option available and try like hell to keep everyone alive. Deborah and Ernest went into the cave while I grabbed a few good-sized rocks and boulders and stacked them in front of the entrance. There was no sense in taking more risks than necessary, so I did my best to construct a makeshift door in the time I had remaining. While it was far from perfect, it did succeed in blocking a large chunk of the opening, which I hoped would be enough to keep any stray rays of light from reaching us. And then the sun rose. We didn't see it, of course, hidden away as we were, but Deborah and I could feel when the sun came up. Our minds grew a little less sharp, our bodies a tad heavier. We were able to sleep now, not that either of us would. A vampire in the night was a thing of monstrous beauty, yet in the daytime we were vulnerable. We knew this instinctively. No one had to tell me to avoid sunlight after I'd been turned. I knew it the first moment I saw sunlight from within the shadows after my change. I could see death in those lovely rays, and I steered clear. For a while, that was all that happened. The sun was up, we were hidden, and the door of rocks kept us concealed. Both Deborah and I could hear the bear breathing deep in the cave, rhythmic and steady, the sound of something huge lost deep in the land of dreams. Part of me wanted to go scout ahead, see just how large our roommate was, but I didn't trust my stealth skills nearly enough to take the risk. If I woke the bear, I might cause the very confrontation we were hoping to avoid. So we sat in silence, save for the occasions when Deborah would pull out a small bottle of water and give Ernest a drink. I had no idea why she'd brought water along, or where in her vest she'd hidden it, but I didn't waste much time on the issue. Deborah was a person who prepared for seemingly every possible situation. After a certain point, it was no longer surprising. Oddly, it did make me wonder if she and Arch had gotten a chance to chat yet. I had a feeling they might get along well, given their penchants for being prepared. "How am I doing?" The question popped out of my mouth sometime into our hiding session, though it was impossible to say how long. A culmination of curiosity and boredom as we waited for the sun to pass. "In terms of the assessment, I mean. Sorry, I'm probably not supposed to ask that. Although perhaps you can at least tell me whether or not I'm allowed a progress report." "You can always ask," Deborah replied. "The answer you get depends on the person doing the assessment. Me, I'm happy to share information so long as I don't expect it to influence the eventual outcome. On a personal level, you're doing fine. I like you, Fred.
You're good to your underlings, you care about your clan, and you genuinely try to find the best solutions to a situation, rather than the bloodiest. If you were just a regular vampire, a newly fanged child, finding his way in the world, there would be no issue. But you assumed a role of leadership decades before you were ready. I don't think either of us needs to pretend that we don't know that. I nodded, already aware that the motion was superfluous. Deborah was spot on. We were both keenly aware that I'd taken on quite a bit when I founded the House of Fred, more than I had realized at the time. While it was hard to look back and see what I could have done differently, that didn't immunize me from the consequences of my actions. "I'll need to spend more time with the others of your clan," Deborah continued. "That's how these things work. I determine your competence as a vampire and as a leader. Both can grow with time and training, but the Blood Council needs to be sure you won't sully the name of your kind in the meantime. You need a lot of work and growth before you'll be a proper clan leader. Maybe too much. There is one thing in your favor. From what I've seen and read, your clan is completely with you. No dissent, no coups in motion, nothing. The House of Fred is a very unusual clan. However, they are also one of the most unified I've ever seen, and let me remind you that I have seen much. That's worth something. Whether it will be enough comes down to you. Dire as the statement might have seemed, I was oddly heartened by the news. After demonstrating how little I knew about being a vampire, I'd been afraid that all hope was lost. Assuming Deborah was telling the truth, and she'd given me no cause to doubt her so far, then it wasn't over yet. Even if my chances of success were abysmal, I'd been through too much to give up while there was still a possible path to victory. If hanging around my friends had taught me nothing else, it was that no loss or victory was determined until the very end. I'll do my best. Not exactly a declaration of intent to come out on top, but it was the most honest reply I could offer. I know. You've been giving it your all from the start. My concern is not your dedication. It's whether your dedication... Deborah's words came to an abrupt halt as she turned, looking toward the bend in the cave. The bear's breathing just changed. With a little focus, I could tell that she was right. Although we'd been whispering low enough that no one without enhanced hearing should have been disturbed, it seemed that some force had awakened our unknowing roommate. We could hear the speed of the new breaths coming in, the quickening of its heart as it began to stir, even the shifting of bones and muscle. I'd spent so much of the night leaning on my senses that it was hard to block the noises out. Such a torrent of information was coming in that I could almost see the bear moving in my mind. Every tightening of muscle, every slow step along the cave's floor, all of it was pouring through the filter of my heightened awareness. Did Deborah live her whole life with this kind of focus? No wonder she'd seemed out of sorts when our senses were suppressed. It must have been like having one sight instantly go from perfect to barely functional. The owner of this cave is awake and moving. Even if it didn't notice us before, there's no way the scent of Ernest's blood won't catch its snout. If we run right into sunlight and fry within seconds. If we stay, you're fighting an aggressive, sizable animal in confined quarters. Don't look to me for help. Tonight, I'm your teacher, not your bodyguard. This is your problem to solve. Flight was out. We may as well lie down and let the bear eat us if our best alternative was running into sunlight. Fight seemed to be the only choice, although that wasn't entirely true. Ernest was the most tantalizing tidbit in our midst. If we offered him over, the bear might be mollified with a meal, or at least persuaded not to try to eat the two things that bit back. I didn't like myself for realizing that was even an option, but I needed to. I had to start considering all my choices, if only so I could consciously reject them. A leader who didn't at least contemplate every available path might miss something vital. This was something I could control, a way I could improve for the sake of my clan. Of course, that didn't change the fact that Deborah had given our wolf a name. Injured or not, convenient or not, I'd said I would see Ernest to safety. Keeping one's word was also an important part of being a leader. "Take Ernest and pull back. I've got a plan." Deeply wishing I felt anywhere near as sure as my voice sounded, I began to run, determined to catch my opponent before he could make it around the turn and spot the others. 7. My goal, despite how the circumstances might appear, was not to kill, or even needlessly injure, the bear. As I saw it, the optimal tactic available to me was to put into practice what I'd spent the whole night learning. I would drain the bear until it got sluggish and tired, and then carefully keep it hedged in until it fell back asleep. With luck, it wouldn't recover until night fell and we were long gone. In its cave, the bear was unlikely to be disturbed, so it should have plenty of time to rest and recuperate. That plan seemed quite logical, right up until I turned the corner and got a look at what kind of animal I'd be dealing with. Listening well might have allowed me to picture the bear's movements, but I didn't have the context to discern its weight from sound alone. Once I ran into its line of vision, my perception of my opponent changed all too quickly. The bear was massive, with dark fur and a few visible scars on its forelegs. He was definitely male and visibly unhappy to find intruders in his home. There was no period of assessment where we both stared at one another and took our enemy in. As soon as he saw me step into view, the bear swiped for my torso with a paw the size of a frying pan. It took me aback. I didn't think bears necessarily defaulted to such aggression, but his brain might very well have registered me as another predator, one that required fighting off. I ducked, thanks more to reflex than skill, and scuttled out of the way, drawing his attention away from the turn in the cave. Keeping the bear focused on me would ensure he didn't go mess with Deborah or Ernest. For now, at least. She hadn't said so specifically, but I had a strong hunch that if the bear became her problem, it wouldn't bode well for my assessment. Luckily, an intruder in his face trumped the smell of blood in the bear's priority list. He turned as I moved, lumbering forward, offering me little room to maneuver. In open terrain, my speed would have given me a substantial advantage. Even as a subpar vampire, I was still fast on my feet. The trouble was that this small area in the back was scarcely large enough to properly accommodate the bear. With both taking up space, there were limited places where I could dodge. And while I was certainly stronger than a human, the fact that I didn't drink from other supernatural creatures meant that I was nowhere near on par with a fully grown bear, especially one of this size. In terms of brute force, I was absolutely outclassed. That was hardly new for someone like me, though. Ducking under another paw and then rapidly retreating to get away from the bear's snapping jaws, I tried to find a way to strike back. He'd already cornered me. Running in either direction would result in taking at least one hit, and running on nothing but animal blood meant that I wasn't sure how completely I'd be able to heal from the injuries he could inflict. If I got too hurt, used too much blood, then the hunger would crawl back into my mind. Handling a giant bear with my full senses was tough enough. I didn't want to imagine what would happen if I lost control. I'd probably get sloppy and end up in chunks on the floor before Deborah could go to all the trouble of finishing me off. The bear was stronger than I was, and my biggest advantage was functionally neutralized thanks to the environment. Except, speed wasn't actually my biggest advantage. That was a tool, a useful one, but it wasn't the thing I'd leaned on most in my life. No, that had always been my brain, a head that was built for calculation, patterns, and numbers. Not the greatest asset in the world, but it was mine, and I had to make use of it. Re-examining my situation, I realized that there was one avenue of potential escape I hadn't considered, and it was one I felt certain the bear would not see coming. Leaping off from the ground, I applied my vampire strength not toward an attack, but rather to hurl myself up and over the bear. The height of the cave was the one part with space to spare, so I utilized it to flee those snapping jaws and swiping claws. I didn't go all the way over. Instead, I grabbed onto the skin along the bear's back and pulled myself down, slamming roughly into his spine. With more time, I would have searched for the veins like Deborah had shown me, finding a spot to bite with the maximum yield of blood that could be safely tapped. Sadly, there wasn't enough time for such intricacies now. I had to weaken the beast fast if I wanted to have a chance at survival. As quickly as I dared,